This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for this program. Your number is 877-217-5757. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. We start with District Attorney Hiller Moore, the DA in the state's largest parish. He joins us frequently, and this one will be a shorter visit than usual, but hopefully we'll have him back at the midway point of the year and get an update on how we're doing in our community as far as thwarting crime. Right now, we are only 23 days away from June, and of course, 30 days in June left to get to the midway point. So with 53 days to go just to get to the midway point, Hiller Moore, we already have more homicides this year than we did in the entire year of 2016. People are concerned, alarmed, maybe for good reason. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so that's unfortunately correct. We're at 66 homicides today as a parish compared to that late in that year, which is really our lowest year that I can ever recall. So it's a bad number. However, if you look at crime overall, crime has actually remained consistent or lower. And, Jim, you know, although the murder rate is as high as it is in 2020, we're averaging about 6.2 folks that are killed per 100,000. If you recall, back in the 1990s, that rate was actually 9.4. Unfortunately, we're talking about Baton Rouge and not the nation. That's who we are concerned about. And Louisiana has led the nation in homicides. When you look at the bigger cities, New Orleans, Shreveport, Lake Charles, we've led the nation in murders for the last 31 years. So obviously, Baton Rouge and Louisiana has a murder problem compared to an overall crime problem.
31 years, that's per capita, and per capita in the nation right now. New Orleans is fourth in this dubious category. Baton Rouge is seventh. That was in the latest from the FBI crime report. But this year, Baton Rouge is noted is at 66 on a pace, unfortunately, to go to about 150 for the year if this continues. And Hiller, usually the summertime is a time when people are out and about and tempers are short. And I know there is grave concern about the numbers even getting worse across the country and in our community in the summer.
Jim, that is normally the case. We surely hope that it's not the case this year. However, I think if you saw the New York Times article last week that talked about murder rates across the nation, they did warn of that. There's not going to be a rapid decrease in the reduction of homicides, and that this hangover and the long shadow is going to continue for some time. Not sure when that end is going to be. But it seems to me, and I think we may have spoke earlier this year, that we seem to have been in multiple summers since the COVID shutdown occurred, and that it is the only things that occurred during the summer. There's people out of school, young kids that are feuding, more time on our hands, that's when we see the increase. But it looks like that has occurred since COVID, when schools pretty much shut down. And add to that the economic downturn, unemployment, folks staying at home with loved ones, and when we see the domestic violence rise, the unease and the different protests that are going on, particularly around social justice and police, less police on the street. I think all of that kind of adds up to why we are where we are. But we surely, and I think that the folks that are killing each other, they've been consistent. This is, we're talking about drug and group and gang activity are responsible for the overwhelming majority of our homicides as the defendant and as the victim. So that's really where we have to focus on.
Since we have more murders, can it be deduced that we have more gangs and more drugs?
I don't think so. I think that we also always use the term gangs. We have more groups than gangs. Gangs are more highly structured than a group is. However, because of that, groups can be a lot more destructive and violent. And with the unease, with police protests, et cetera, it seems that more people are relying on taking the law in their own hands than going to the police to report a crime and letting the police handle it. But that's been going on for some time, but I think it's probably increased some. But our gangs have remained consistent. I think we have groups. 30 or 40 that we want to count all of those. But also remember, a group killing or gang killing is also a group of drug dealers or could be family members that are feuding against others. So we have to really broaden our definition of what is a group or a gang.
All right, and a listener has corrected me. We are only 23 days away from the midpoint of the year. It is June 7th. And so the numbers aren't quite as bad as I stated, but we're still on a course, if this is not corrected, that would be at 150 murders for the year. And in 2016, just 5 years ago, we were down to 62 in 2016. Now, Hiller Moore, a listener, also notes that there was a gun buyback program that has been in place before that was executed this weekend. How did that go?
It went well. And I'm glad you asked about that because I want to make sure the listeners know the reason behind the gun buyback, how that started, was several summers ago when we had a lot of young kids who were out at school and were at home at relatives' homes and found guns that were just unsecured. And most of the guns, I believe, were all legal guns. And the idea was if you are a grandparent, aunt, uncle, you have kids that are coming over, if you have a gun that you do not want anymore, we wanted to give them an avenue to get that unsecured weapon, if they're not going to secure it, get it out of the potential hands of a child that may hurt themselves or others. And that's where the gun buyback came from. The intent was never, our thought was never going to be that a gang member is going to come turn his gun in and get $50 of gas for a gun. So I think we collected 30 guns this week, and one was an assault-type weapon. Most were rifles and some pistols. So it was a good event. It's just kind of raising awareness. But please lock your car, store your gun safely, because that gun stolen out of your car could potentially be a murder weapon, and oftentimes is.
877-217-5757 for Hill or Moore, Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Charlotte, you are on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to ask my question of the guest. I would like to know whether he considers it an injustice to refuse to retry persons convicted without unanimous jury based on financial reasons.
All right. Well, that has been determined by the U.S. Supreme Court. Retroactive cases, the Supreme Court says those convictions stand. That in many ways is less of a headache for you, isn't it, Taylor Moore?
Well, it's still ongoing. There was some legislation that was proposed by Representative Gaines to have all of the convictions that are final, in that Ramos case dealt with convictions that were not final, that were still on appeal, that were less than unanimous. And as you know, we are having to retry those cases. And for Baton Rouge, it's around 20. The cases I believe she was referring to is the Frederick Edwards case.
All right.
Which would mean that those that are on have exhausted their appeals, around 2,000 possibly and more would have to be retried. And for Baton Rouge, that's around 300 and something cases that are 50, 40 years old. It surely would be a burden for us to just attempt that. But that case, Jim, although the United States Supreme Court decided it has to go back to the Louisiana Supreme Court to see how they will rule on the issue. So I think that matter is still open.
But right now, if somebody in Louisiana was convicted 5 years ago, and let's say the jury was 11 to 1, what does that mean? Does that conviction stand, or is there a possibility that there will be a new trial for the individual?
Yeah. No, that conviction stands. Now, look, if someone were to come in here, lawyers, that would present evidence that someone's factually innocent, and that may be in that group of people, that's different than just saying the verdict was 11 to 1. And DAs and including myself, always going to be open to listen to someone that says that there is proof or facts of a factual innocence and there was an error made.
Now, another listener asked a question, and you alluded to it, but it is worth expanding on, about how the nationwide trend in homicides is also up. But is it up as much as it is here?
Yes. Again, I hate to keep referring to the New York Times, but they did a study. It looks like overall in the United States, murder per city, and it's widespread, is up 25%. So we may be a little higher, but it is 25% across the board. And Jim, you know, one note, January this year, we had 17 homicides. In May, we had 15. January, that's an unusual number. And also worth noting, at this point, we have 13 of the 66 homicides or domestic violence or intimate partner related. And there's probably eight others that are somewhat related, but not, we don't call it a domestic violence or intimate partner, but it is somehow related to some family issue. So that's a significant number that you can't overlook, and I think that is directly related to COVID.
Well, we will strive to get an update from you at the midway point of the year, which would mean the first week of July. So hope to see you in a month, Hill or Moore. We'll let you go. Know you have a busy day. Appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Take care. See you soon. 877-217-5757. Back after this 90-second pause with Tom Aswell of Louisiana Voice. This is Jim Engster. Pleased to have you with us. Jeff Palermo producing, and in studio, Tom Aswell, the intrepid reporter, publisher of Louisiana Voice. Politics at its worst is what he calls it. And we have a few matters to discuss with Mr. Aswell. The pride of Ruston, Louisiana, 877-217-5757 is your number. And Tom Aswell, let's start with the toy department. LSU's baseball team, surprising many, now is a game away from advancing to a super regional against Tennessee. If the Tigers can win tonight at Eugene, Oregon, against the University of Oregon, the host team, the Ducks. And last night, LSU won 4-1 to keep going under Paul Maneri. It's an impressive three games for the Fighting Tigers. Have had some lumps this season.
It has been. I heard Frankes last night say that the NCAA had ruled that even if LSU defeats Oregon, the Super Regional will still be held there.
Will be held where?
In Oregon, at the same stadium, because of the coronavirus. They're not going to move the...
Really?
Yeah, it'll be in the same site, even though Oregon may lose. So that's, you know.
Well, and it would be a huge accomplishment for Paul Maneri.
Oh, it would.
Who last won a national title in the year of 2009, 12 years. And apparently that was too long for the powers at LSU. You wrote in one of your missives of late on Louisiana Voice that he was told to leave.
That's what I'm told. That's
your sources unimpeachable.
Well, I won't say they're unimpeachable, but they're good sources.
Yeah, well
no sources
in a case like this, though. Look, he had a tough year.
He did.
And he's actually older now than Skip Bertman was when he retired.
I didn't realize that.
Why wouldn't it be appropriate for the AD to call him in and say, "Look, you know, it's just time to move on down the line."
You know, that. Who was it said there are two types of coaches, one that's been fired and those that will be?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. By the way, my team lost yesterday.
Your team?
My Louisiana Tech Bulldogs.
Yeah.
NC State beat them, walloped them 14-7.
I'm sure Dave Nitz is in mourning.
Yeah, Dave Nitz,
who's
I'm sure.
He's in there his tenure as the play-by-play guy.
He's been around forever. He has.
But the guy that early on was the big favorite to replace Maneri, Kevin O'Sullivan at Florida, his team lost 19-1 in its regional to South Alabama. That's not going to look good if they hire him, is it?
No, somebody's going to grab that Tech coach. They're not going to be able to keep him at the salary they pay.
All right, well.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him come to LSU.
Well, if they hire this guy O'Sullivan, it'll be like Jodine hiring Jerry DiNardo. He had just lost 65-0 to Tennessee when he came here from Vanderbilt. So.
Correct, yep.
We'll see. But independent of that, you, through the last few years, have taken a tough examination of the career and the path of John, as you call him, no relation, Kennedy, who is apparently running for re-election next year. That'll be the marquee race. It'll even be a bigger marquee race if he doesn't run. And there's some who speculate that at age 71, as he will be next year, that he might decide to move on down the line, too. But do you think he's all in?
I think he is. And I don't see anybody on the horizon in the Democratic Party that can put up a viable opposition to him. I don't see it in the cards right now. Somebody may come forth, but I just don't see it.
Well, Tom writes John, no relation, Kennedy, as he calls him, as does Brian Williams.
That's Brian Williams, yeah.
wraps himself in some sort of blanket of homespun philosophy that borders on a cheap imitation of Walter Brennan from the Real McCoy sitcom of the late 50s and early 60s, even to the point of appearing semi-literate with his misspelling of the word believe in a TV spot he made on behalf of the NRA. Now, was that intentional?
No, I don't think it was intentional.
But they misspelled it?
Yeah, they spelled it B-E-L-I-V-E. They left out
the Belive.
Belive. Yeah.
Belive, okay.
And I don't know He did that. Whoever produced the commercial did it, and he just didn't catch it.
Well, apparently, you're right, he thinks everyone is laughing with him instead of at him. Tom goes on to say, behind that aw shucks veneer lies a ruthless, cutthroat politician who doubtless knows his constituency. Well, he tried winning as a Democrat and did many times for revenue secretary. Well, not, but he went from revenue to treasurer.
Treasurer.
He won the treasurer's race several times. But he lost in races for attorney general as a Democrat. Mm-hmm. He got in the race for governor. I think by then he had switched to the Republican Party in 2003, but he pulled back when Bobby Jindal got the blessing of Mike Foster. But he also lost twice for the U.S. Senate as a Democrat.
Yep.
And those were in the years of, was it 2004? Actually, he was still a Democrat when he ran for governor briefly. 2004, he lost to Vitter. And in 2008, he was a Republican when he lost to Mary Landrieu. So he did lose one race as a Republican. But he seems to have floated with the Louisiana electorate, which once was solidly blue and now is solidly red. Why wouldn't a politician who wants to stay in office, as John Kennedy obviously does, roll with the flow?
Well, that's politics. That's the way politics works. They all do that.
Yeah. But you're chiding him for it. You could chide Bill Cassidy for that. You could chide a lot of people.
Bill Cassidy did at least vote in favor of impeachment, which went against his constituency. So he did kind of break from the crowd.
But he did not vote to negate the election either, as Kennedy did.
Right, that's correct.
As Garrett Graves did, as Mike Johnson did,
the
as
entire
Steve
delegation,
Scalise, as Clay Higgins did. Go down the line, they all did.
Except
Bill Cassidy and Cedric, Richmond.
Cedric Richmond, yeah.
Yeah, who's now working for the other.
Correct.
Yeah, the other combatant in the 2020 presidential election. So Kennedy looks at it one way and Cassidy does the other, and I hear they're not particularly kissing cousins.
No, they're not. It's going to be interesting when Cassidy runs. It's going to be 5 more years before he runs, so the voters tend to forget over time, so we'll see what happens with Cassidy. But I just don't see anybody beating Kennedy. I really don't.
Tom Aswell with us, publisher of Louisiana Voice. 877-217-5757 is your number. And we've got some ground to cover. And since we're talking about the Senate, a listener asks about the national scene with Joe Manchin III of West Virginia. Says in no uncertain terms that he will not vote for the Democrats' far-reaching bill to combat voter suppression. What do you make of the Democrat from West Virginia?
Manchin seems to have a habit of going against his own party. I don't know what his deal is. I guess you would call him a dino, Democrat in name only.
Yeah, but he's also in a state that Donald Trump, I think Trump got over 75% of the votes in West Virginia. So Joe Manchin, and some would say it's amazing that he's still a Democrat.
Yeah, I think so.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods, you were on with Tom Aswell. Hi, Patricia.
I just had a question about Senator Kennedy, if you don't mind going back to that.
Certainly.
What are his legislative accomplishments?
Good question.
He has gotten some bills passed, and he would be the first to say that, but they're not high-profile bills.
Right.
I don't think there's any question about him being a hard worker. He is, and he's a smart guy, but when he goes on Fox News, you hear him talking about Nancy Pelosi ingesting Tide Pods and saying things, it must suck to be that dumb.
Yeah.
Well.
And you should have a gun.
You should have
love is the answer.
And here's a guy who supported John Kerry for president in 2004.
Amazing, isn't it?
who encouraged Buddy Romer to veto two anti-abortion bills, and now is Mr. Pro-Life. He had an epiphany, Tom. Is there anything wrong with having an epiphany?
When you do it for expediency, yeah.
But do we know that? Maybe this is the real John Kennedy.
I don't think so. I think he's a political animal first and last and always.
Whichever way
the wind's blowing, that's what he's going to jump out in front of the parade and say, follow me.
Okay, but he wouldn't be the first politician to do that.
Of course not.
No. But he will apparently be running for re-election in 2022. He will be the heavy favorite to be re-elected to a second term as U.S. Senator. And then in 2024, look out. It could be John Neely Kennedy on the road to Iowa to start his presidential quest. And I bet you, unlike Bobby Jindal, I bet you he'll get at least one delegate.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he will.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. We'll spend some more time with Tom Aswell of Louisiana Voice after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Tom Aswell of Louisiana Voice is with us for a little longer. You can find him on the World Wide Web, where he reports on many things that others don't. And he's national, local, everything that's happening in the world, Tom follows it. A listener, this is Tom on Bluebonnet, notes the U.S. national debt, and I'm looking at it as we speak. Of course, it rises by the second. $28,377,000,000,000. That's the national debt. And Tom says, before we go crazy praising Cassidy for his votes on impeachment and for keeping the election and for the investigation of the insurrection, that Cassidy voted for the Trump budget plan in his first year in office that has caused this debt to skyrocket. And John Kennedy did not vote for it. So in that case, it looks like Kennedy, based on the debt and the deficit, made the more prudent vote, Mr. Aswell.
That's what it looks like in that case, yeah. Jim, before we go any further, I'd like to interject something totally unrelated to what we normally talk about. But in 1967, I was hired off the streets in my first newspaper job by Tom Kelly at the Ruston Daily Leader. And Mr. Kelly passed away Saturday, and I just wanted to make note of that.
Yeah, he was a legend in those parts.
He was a wonderful man, wonderful man.
I'm sorry for your loss. Okay. Well, Tom Aswell is still going, and he covers Louisiana, and right now we have a legislative session that's a few days from the finish line. Some matters still to be unsettled, but another listener, Hal in Monroe, asks about the concealed carry thing. The governor's apparently going to be put on the spot on some of these, and he's a pro Second Amendment fellow, but he's not enthused about just expanding concealed carry to anybody who has a gun.
I agree with him. I just don't see the rationale of allowing just anyone to walk around with a gun. It's crazy. This is not Dodge City in 1880. I'm sorry. We need to be a little more civilized than that. I'm very much opposed to that open carry bill.
Well, there are now more guns than there are people in the U.S.
I have three guns myself. I'm not anti-gun.
Only 39% of Americans have guns. But in Louisiana, look at Baton Rouge with a metro area of about 800,000 people. That'd mean there are about 1 million guns floating around in Baton Rouge. And they got 30 back in this buyback program.
Your previous guest illustrates the problem with the guns. Hiller Moore, in talking about all the homicides, that's a huge problem, and it's not just in Baton Rouge.
I saw a homicide the other day in Baton Rouge. It was a stabbing, though, and that's the old axiom. If they weren't doing it with guns, they'd do it with something else. But it's a lot more efficient to kill somebody with a gun and a lot more efficient to kill a lot of people with
an assault weapon. Absolutely. And that judge in California that overturned the assault gun ban, that's just crazy. I'm sorry. I have very strong beliefs about that.
Why has the country gone more right on guns?
Well, I blame the NRA. They have pushed that agenda, and to to the limit, and the money that they throw at, mm-hmm. at Congress, money talks and BS walks, you know, and that's what they do. And the gun lobby in Washington, I think, is to blame for a lot of that.
Well, now we have a very conservative U.S. Supreme Court, six members that are right of center.
Yep.
So it would seem that anything that goes before the high court on guns and a lot of social issues has a bigger chance of getting to the finish line than it did before.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to see a lot of changes, and some of them I guess we'll like, and some of them we won't like. Mm-hmm. I imagine a lot of them I won't like, but, hey, you know, that's mm-hmm. that's me.
All right, another listener notes that in Louisiana last week, as of last week, only 32% of the people in our state were vaccinated.
Oh.
Twice.
Yep.
Two shots. And in Mississippi, the number's even lower. It's 30%, which is reflective of the blue state, red state thing. We're not going to get to the 70% the president wants by July 4th.
No. No.
So what's going on regarding the aversion to getting vaccinations?
I think it all goes back to Mr. Trump's rhetoric about it, and he was more or less anti-vaccine, and his constituency follows him unquestioningly. It's the mentality, the Trump mentality.
He won Louisiana by right at 400,000 votes,
yep.
lost the national election by more than 7 million votes. But in Louisiana, you don't find many politicians, even Democrats, criticizing Mr. Trump.
Nope. They're scared to death of him, and I don't know why. Get a spine. That's the only thing. Get a spine and speak your conscience instead of trying to follow this clown.
Do you think he's coming back?
Well, I've heard talk that he might run for Congress, of all things.
No, he's not running for Congress.
Well, that would be a Richard Nixon ploy, and it could really blow up in his face. I saw today where his daughter is not going to run for Congress in North Carolina. Laura, is that the one?
Which one?
Laura.
Ivanka Trump? Or his daughter,
no.
And daughter-in-law.
The one who I thought I heard him say it was his daughter.
Daughter-in-law.
Okay, I heard they say that she's not going to run in North Carolina, and he has endorsed someone that's not a favorite of the Republican Party. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Well, he has endorsed John Kennedy
yeah.
for re-election,
right.
And he obviously will not be endorsing Bill Cassidy.
Nope.
But Cassidy has the luxury of a 6-year term, and by the time he's up for re-election, Trump will be 80 years old. Would Cassidy have been this bold on impeachment if he were running next
year? That's a very good question, and I suspect probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Well.
Politics being what it is.
Well, John in New Roads writes, how many infants are killed inside the safety of their own homes during knife fights? You know, when kids get killed, that's something that is perplexing, to say the least. But in Baton Rouge, we get all lathered up when there's a killing on the other side of Florida Boulevard, being the side we're on. And a few days ago, there was a triple murder at Fairway View Apartments. Back
right.
in the day, you probably spent a few hours at the Fairway View Lounge. And at the Fairway View Apartments, people can relate to that. And it's an area that, of course, the white slight majority in the parish—
mm-hmm.
Doesn't like when things happen close to home.
No, they don't, but it's a problem parish-wide. And I don't think we ought to neglect it just because it happens on the north side of Florida Boulevard. It's a serious problem. People with guns, they've gone nuts with them, just pure and simple.
But I don't think that's going to change.
No, it's not going to change. The buyback illustrates that point right there.
In what way?
The few guns they got.
30. They got 30.
Yeah, such a few.
30 out of a million.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Yeah, and the people who are, that's the old axiom, people who are selling them back are those least likely to use them to commit a crime. And it's a it's a vicious circle we're in. But on the other hand, we do cherish the Second Amendment. How can we bridge the gap between having some guns and not having other guns?
Well, first of all, I am for a flat-out ban on assault weapons, period. You don't need an assault weapon to deer hunt. I'm sorry. And that's
speak as a country boy.
I do. Was I a country? I don't hunt, but I did grow up in the country.
Okay. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on Talk Louisiana with Tom Aswell. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Tom. Two short questions. Yeah. One, what is the development now with the BREC proposal in the House? And I propose that they do buy the properties back if they want in the communities. And State of Louisiana made the news again yesterday morning, CBS Sunday Morning News, with the mother of the young man that got killed in North Louisiana. Where is the Attorney General for State of Louisiana prosecuting on that?
Are you talking about Ronald Green?
I think he is. Ronald Green, the man who was killed in custody of state police. And that one is far from over.
I'll make note that Mr. Belton, who is the district attorney in Lincoln and Union Parish, that the killing of Ronald Green occurred in Union Parish, and nothing was done about that for 14 months until the state police finally had to do it when they got a little pressure on them from the media. And Mr. Belton is running for attorney general, and I think he's going to have a tough time explaining why he didn't take some sort of action in that for 14 months.
And the BREC bill is dead.
That's what
White
I hear.
Wanted to split up BREC, and to his credit, people came to him, and he changed his mind.
And
it's always admirable when a politician, in a way, admits he was wrong. And Bodie, he didn't have to do that. He just pulled his bill.
Yeah. That was admirable of him to do that.
But the legislature, when we have money, Tom, and this year we have money, next year we probably won't, but we get involved in all these other issues like transgender athletes. And in Louisiana, the quality of life is affected far more by a record number of homicides than it is by transgender athletes.
Sure, of course it is. Something's got to be done about it. And you know, somebody's going to have a Take Back the Night rally, and then, you know, to make big media splash, and then next week they'll forget about it.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens, but another listener notes that term limits turned out not to be such a good idea for the state legislature.
No, because they can run for the House till they're term limited, and then run for the Senate till they're term limited, and then turn right around and run for the House again.
So you just want a tougher term limit thing. You don't like Francis Thompson?
Well, I'm not going to go there.
All right. Tom Aswell, always a pleasure. Let's do it again soon, and we'll be back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Bob Jacobson, a hydrologist for 40 years, is with us. His passion is the Louisiana environment. And right now, the talk in environmental circles centers largely about a discussion about the value or lack thereof of the Mid-Barataria Diversion Project, a $2 billion project designed to protect our coast forevermore, if that can be done. And Governor Edwards is on board. Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser is saying it's a terrible idea, a waste of money, won't work. But the diversion aims to stave off a loss of coast, which is substantial. Chip Klein was with us last week, who is the guy who heads the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority. And he noted that we've lost 2,000 square miles since the 1950s. And if you'd like to chime in, 877-217-5757. And, Bob, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim.
Pride of East Jefferson High School. We might get to a little more of that later. But it's a serious situation and an existential threat to our state. And you say that both the governor and the lieutenant governor are wrong. Why?
Well, with all due respect to both our governor and our lieutenant governor, I know their hearts are in the right places, and I know that all of their staff and everybody are working hard on this problem. But our major issue right now is the way we're framing the problem. We're talking about protecting the coast. We're talking about restoring the coast. We're talking about saving the coast. Neither of those three things are possible. And framing our discussions about the coast with those three things is leading us in a way that, you know, we have a lieutenant governor and a governor who disagree on a big project. You know, we need to frame this problem a little better. And also we need to be able to do something that the citizens in those exact parishes want to see done. Because obviously the citizens in Plaquemines Parish and their police jury and in St. Bernard Parish and their police jury don't even want to see this project.
Well, I think we do agree something needs to be done.
Yeah, and the question basically is, what can we do? And part of that goes back to the scientists. And, you know, the scientists that work with CPR and our Water Institute and everywhere else, they're doing fantastic work. Part of this is really, I guess it's a PR issue. We're talking in simple terms. We think we have to talk in simple terms. Sometimes I guess we do. But this is not a simple problem. And words like protect, restore, and save are leading us down the wrong path to think about this problem.
You don't think that's possible?
No. Myself and many, many, many of our professionals that have been working in this field for decades, it is possible to look at individual features like Grand Isle, where I'm headed to this afternoon and going to enjoy some surf fishing. It's possible to do some very impressive things with specific features. But our coast, when it comes to storm surge, massive storm surge, when it comes to our large-scale ecological resources like brown shrimp and speckled trout, it's not about individual features and preserving individual features. It's about a very large, comprehensive system, and we have to understand deltaic geology and the trend that's been going on for hundreds of years, and we have to understand climate change and sea level rise. And we have to understand the limitations of man. There's a lot of hubris. There was obviously a lot of hubris in the way we went into mm-hmm. this coast. But there's a lot of hubris, unfortunately, in using words like save and protect and restore. We can restore grandma's armoire. We can build massive barriers sometimes to actually protect. And, of course, we're dealing with protection issues here in Baton Rouge and Ascension with our rainfall right now. We can't protect people from flooding. People can have flood insurance, and government can reduce the cost of flood insurance, and that's it. That's it. And we can't save our coast.
You're sounding like there's no hope.
No, there's lots of hope. You know, there's going to be a New Orleans for decades, if not hundreds of years in the future, and there's going to be potential resources that our grandchildren can enjoy. What we want to do is optimize those resources and maximize them within the context of the reality that we're dealing with. But we can't make good decisions, and we can't agree and move forward. And two cases in point, our diversion and the other front story in the Advocate today, you know, Bayou Lafourche, you know, how to get everybody on the same page to do something about Bayou Lafourche. And the problem is we're not framing these decisions within the right context.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Bob Jacobson, a hydrologist for 40 years who's followed the path over the last four decades of Louisiana's diminishing coastline. And the governor and many others believe this $2 billion plan that would be paid for by the BP money is something that's at least worth a shot, but you're saying not so fast.
Well, on that specific project, I think we first of all need to call it what it is, which is an experiment. The scientists have actually said it's not. I mean, this is one of our other little facets of the issue. Oh, we might create 27 square miles, but we're probably going to create something like between, you know, 5 and 50 square miles. We got to focus on the cone of uncertainty. And while it could potentially have a lot of benefits, we know it's going to have a lot of impact. So the question is, how do you trade off those benefits and impacts? And that's where the citizens and the governor obviously disagree. But we could probably get someplace where we would make the right decision if we weren't talking about this in grandiose, romantic terms of restoring the coast, which isn't going to happen. This project will not lower the cost of anybody's flood insurance, ever. So how can you say it's going to protect anybody?
David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good to have you back, David.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. And let me point out, we're in early, early hurricane season, and there's already a tropical disturbance in the Caribbean. For every inch of restored wetlands that this boondoggle $2 billion would restore, until and unless there's an all-out, concentrated, organized effort, which the Republicans won't accept, called human-caused climate change, the $2 billion will be a complete, absolute waste of money.
What about climate change?
Well, climate change is a fact, as is deltaic geology, as is all of the different things humanity has done in this coast for 300 years. But also there's a fact that we can do some positive things. My friends at CPRA have built some nice features out there and restored some features that we have to recognize have limited lifespans, but they do assist in our habitat and the productivity. So in addition to focusing on what really protection means, which means lowering the cost of flood insurance, and, hey, let's not call something protection anymore. The Corps doesn't call the levee system in New Orleans protection. It's risk reduction. It's there to lower the cost of flood insurance. And if something doesn't lower the cost of flood insurance, whether it's a project in East Baton Rouge or Ascension Parish, or whether it's something in the coast, then don't even talk about it as having a flood risk management purpose. The only other purpose in doing any of these things, we talk about land, but land per se isn't the issue. The issue is the ecosystem and the species that we want. There's news in the paper today about the dolphin, but there's also obviously shrimp and oysters and menhaden and everything else we know that our coast is for. The goal is the productivity of the ecosystem. Migratory birds and everything else. And we have to evaluate these projects. Now, we need experiments. So my position is not opposed per se to big experiments. The question is, are we doing an experiment that's really going to help us in the big picture?
Another listener notes that $2 billion is a drop in the bucket for what it'll take. And I think that's correct.
Exactly.
But the governor and General Honoré wanted to sue the oil companies for damage they have done to the coast. But people like Democrats like Mary Landrieu said they didn't like the idea of suing the oil companies. Of course, Senator Landrieu got a lot of money from the oil companies. But you're smiling. Would that have been a prudent way to take action, additional action?
We have a lot of features in our coast that we can go into and do some things. One of them is oil and gas canals and spoil banks and doing some selective improvements.
You didn't answer the question, though.
Yeah, the oil and gas industry affected our coast in specific areas, but sometimes we blow things out of proportion. The East Bank levee system around the New Orleans area hadn't been affected. So, you know, when the SLFPA East sues the oil companies to get some money to try to run things because
they're citizens. Well, what about the areas that were affected?
Well, Leeville and down in that area of Lafourche, you can take it doesn't take a genius to see, and I've been going down to Leeville for 40 years. You know, it doesn't take a genius to see that there's an impact there.
Ray in Prairieville. Ray, you're on with Bob Jacobson. Hi, Ray.
Thanks for taking the call, Jim. And Mr. Jacobson, I just want to congratulate you. We don't seem to be very popular to take a scientific approach to anything. And, yes, I agree with you about the coastal restoration. We put the levees up to cut the flooding, so now we're going to knock the levees down and let it flood at there.
All right. Is that what's going to happen?
Well, coastal geology depends upon deltas. Our delta depends upon a river. You know, we've been talking about reconnecting. Some of my friends have been talking about reconnecting the river to the delta for 40 years. That's got to be a part of it. But Mother Nature doesn't manage reconnecting through the delta through one little spigot that it's going to operate through 10 years. That's now how Mother Nature built a delta.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Jim. People just don't see beyond their own lifetimes. I mean, you're looking at 100 to 200 years of dedicated effort to...
All right. What about kicking the can down the road? We've done that quite a bit, haven't we?
Yeah, and it's tough because there's interest and nobody wants to see something change specifically in their backyard. The people in Donaldsonville don't want to see a new pump station built.
Well.
And that's understandable, but that's why we have to frame this thing in terms of what we can do. And obviously, it's always going to be about politics. I mean, you and I know that.
And Billy Nungess, we only have a few seconds. He says we got to save the dolphins.
Dolphins is a great indicator of how healthy our coast is. And, yeah, you would say, hey, if we don't have dolphins, we don't have much of a coast.
All right. Well, Bob Jacobson, you know your stuff. Let's get you back soon. Thank you.
Pleasure, Jim.
Good talking with you. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. Until tomorrow, for Jeff Palermo, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.